Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Missouri Senator Roy Blunt is traveling the state in this big election year, cheering on Republican Mitt Romney for president and working on cybersecurity. And he was just named the new honorary co-chair of the Alliance for Healthcare Reform. The senator's in the studio with me, and we'll visit with him in just a moment. Later on this hour, a new documentary on the Kansas City blues and jazz scene recounts such legends as Jay McShann, Charlie Parker, and Count Basie. We'll visit with the film's producer later on. But first up, Missouri Senator Roy Blunt. And Senator, always good to have you.
Hey, Steve, good to be with you.
Well, you and five other senators just sent a letter to President Barack Obama yesterday urging him to work with Congress on cybersecurity legislation instead of acting unilaterally through an executive order. Why are you concerned about cybersecurity and what you want the president to do?
Well, I think, you know, cybersecurity, the ability to somehow impact our critical infrastructure by getting into the computer system is generally recognized as our greatest vulnerability right now. The military things, something called .mil, and the government .gov, actually fairly secure. There aren't many things that the government's better at than the private sector, but securing the internet appears to be one of the things where the government is better. That leaves the financial structure, the utility structure, particularly vulnerable, and, you know, defining what that critical infrastructure is and then figuring out how we can protect it is really important to do, but it's important to do it in the right way. And what Senator Hutchison and Senator McCain and I and a couple of other senators asked the and Saxby Chambliss, the Republican ranking member on the Intel Committee that
right.
I serve on, asked the president not to do is not to move forward with an executive order that doesn't have the benefit of debate. This is a big issue. Actually, this is an issue that a lot of members of the Senate and the House know quite a bit about, and they need to be involved in how we secure that system and still protect the things that the government doesn't have any reason to be part of.
You know, you've been traveling around the state a whole lot in recent days, and I'm wondering what you're hearing from voters as Election Day nears, Senator.
Well, you know, I always travel around the state
a
lot. I was in all 115 counties again after I was elected to the Senate, I think in the next 15 months. Yesterday, I was here with Mayor James looking at some things in the city that he'd like to do that I hope I can be helpful with and some things we've already worked together on. I was just at Fort Leavenworth talking about what we need to do there to secure the continued economic impact that the fort and the schools at the port have on this whole region. I think people continue to be primarily concerned about the economy, primarily concerned about knowing that their government is headed in a direction that allows them to make good common sense decisions that help create opportunity for other people. There's a real pent-up desire all over the country, and particularly, I think, right here in Kansas and Missouri, to do things.
Mm-hmm.
But people don't want to do things that don't make sense, and they're looking for the signals about American energy, common sense regulation, reliable tax policy, and other things that encourage them to push their money to the middle of the table and see if they can't help create a job, a private sector job for somebody else.
But there is so much uncertainty out there, and I've heard you talk about that in the past, Senator. The country, as you well know, is headed for this series of big decisions in the weeks ahead on continuation of the Bush tax cuts, on the payroll tax, and on these massive budget cuts called for by the new federal law that deals with reducing the size of the federal budget deficit. All this is sort of called the fiscal cliff. A lot of experts are telling me they don't think the Congress can stop itself from going off the cliff. What do you think?
Well, I think I'll know a lot more about that the day after the election.
Yeah.
I think it's really hard to predict what's going to happen in November and December until we know what happens Election Day. And frankly, I believe both the presidential election and control of the Senate are a really close call. I don't know anybody that doesn't think Republicans are going to continue to control the House of Representatives. But depending on how those other two things happen, it really does have an impact on what we can do in November and December. as opposed to what has to wait until January, and we'll just have to see. You know, there is too much uncertainty in the country today, but there's also a lot of willingness, I think, to solve problems, starting with tax code needs to be less complicated, greater sense, broad-based sense that some people aren't getting advantage of the tax code when the average guy is not. I think at the end of the day, the best thing to do in this moment on taxes is to continue the current tax structure for a few months into next year, and that becomes the deadline for producing a flatter, fairer tax system at both the corporate level and the individual level to create more more of a sense that the tax system doesn't pick winners and losers and isn't dependent on whether you have the best accountant or not, but is basically understandable and fair.
We're visiting with Missouri Senator Roy Blunt. So, Senator, you're saying you would continue the Bush tax cuts for at least six more months, and also that temporary payroll tax, or are you in a different place on
that? No, I'm in a different place on that. I think crippling the Social Security system was never a good thing to do, and I have consistently had big questions about that. You know, Social Security is one of the problems we need to solve, and you don't solve it by not having people contribute into it. And when you take 2 percentage points out of a contribution that's only less than 6 percentage points, that has a huge impact on the future of that system. That system's going to be in trouble sooner than it would have been if we would have continued to contribute into the system. So I think the tax structure, you know, in the end of 2010, I was surprised, frankly, that the president so quickly said, no, let's continue these taxes that I've been saying for 2 years we needed to raise.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was, with an economy in the situation it was in December of 2010, no time to raise taxes. Well, there's no economic number that's significantly different or better, at least, than the economy at the end of 2010. I think people are ready, again, Steve, for a big relook at the tax structure. There's no reason to further complicate that by trying to raise taxes for a short period of time when really the goal in that short period of time would be to let's look at this system and make it work better for everybody.
And the payroll tax cut was always intended from the start to be temporary, right? It was a temporary boost to the economy.
It was a temporary boost. The president, his proposal was, let's do a temporary 1 year, and then at the end of that 1 year, suddenly it became, well, no, it really, there's no time to raise taxes on anybody, so let's keep it for 2 years. But when you're doing that, you're further damaging the long-term viability of the Social Security system.
Mm-hmm. Why should anyone have faith that Congress can deal with this issue, even if you extend it for 6 months into next year? I mean, in the wake of the debt ceiling crisis, you know, last year, in the wake of the super committee unable to come to agreement on the issues we're talking about here, why should the average listener out there have faith that Congress can pull itself together 6 months from now?
Well, that's why I don't have a lot of faith that Congress can deal with this late the rest of this year, because this is going to be the same Congress that, particularly on the Senate side, has just been unwilling to deal with the most fundamental building blocks it takes to solve these problems. You know, we haven't voted on a budget in the Senate in 3 years. We're not going to have voted on a single appropriations bill before the election, which means that there's been no debate, as the fiscal year's already started, no debate on how we're going to spend money. You certainly can't get spending under control if you don't debate how you're going to spend money. And the law requires you to have a budget, by the way. And until from 1974, when the Budget Act passed, until 3 years ago, the Senate had always passed a budget. Now, and so had the House. The Senate and House didn't always agree on the budget, but they always both did their part of getting that part of the law satisfied. And suddenly, 3 years ago, both Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid decided, you know, we really don't want to have a budget this year. Republicans then got in control of the House the next year. They've had two budgets straight. Senator Reid, the only person in the Senate that can bring a bill to the floor as the majority leader, has refused to have a budget vote on the Senate floor for 3 years now on a budget that the Senate would actually produce, and it's a mistake.
We're talking with Missouri Senator Roy Blunt about the fiscal cliff that's coming up after the election. Are the Bush tax cuts and continuing those cuts, Senator, is that where the real rubber hits the road here? Because there's this big debate over whether the wealthy should be entitled to that tax cut going forward or not.
You know, I think that debate is actually so false in its nature. It's, I'm sure, good politics, but it's a false debate. It's a false argument. It's like the Buffett tax. You know, there was no more stupid tax argument that anybody's ever made than you should tax investment income that you could lose at the same rate you tax income in a paycheck. Mm-hmm. The country's never believed that. If you don't encourage risk, people don't take risk. And if they don't take risk, they don't create opportunity for somebody else. And risk-reward is the ultimate economic law that the president of the United States should understand, and the president doesn't understand it.
But the Democrats say the super rich can afford to accept a tax increase.
And it makes almost no difference, and they know it. It's like one day of federal spending if you go back to the old rate. It's a good political argument, Steve, and that's all it is.
Is that where the nut rubber hits the road, though, in terms of trying to sort through
all these?
It could
be. It could be. And whether we have, you know, if the president says we're going to reduce military spending in a way that the Secretary of Defense says would damage the defense of the country, and we're going to cut NIH funding, the National Institute of Health funding, and other things, if you all don't agree to a tax increase, I'm not sure what happens there, but this is the same president, again, that 2 years ago could have – he controlled the Congress 2 years ago. If he wanted to increase taxes, he should have done it. But what'd he say? Said, be bad for the economy. Now, the economy is no better off today than it was there. The only difference in today and 2 years ago is you've got a whole bunch of people who've given up on the economy and don't even consider themselves in the workforce anymore. So arguably, it's in significantly worse shape than it was 2 years ago.
Do you think a lot of Missourians, Senator, are more ready to sort of deal with the consequences of the fiscal cliff and accept some heavier tax load and accept the fact that the federal government budget will be cut? You know, are they more ready to do it than what Congress appears to be ready to deal with this issue now instead of a few months from now?
Now, if the question is, are more people in Missouri or the rest of the country ready for somebody else's taxes to go up?
I'm just wondering if citizens and taxpayers aren't ready, aren't acknowledging that it's time for some sacrifice, they're willing to go ahead, and yet the Congress keeps kicking the can down the road.
I don't think so. I've been in no room where everybody said, raise my taxes. I've been in a number of rooms where people have said, fine with us if the really rich people have their taxes raised. So, yeah, if they're willing for somebody else's taxes to go up, that's the story of taxes. But that doesn't solve the problem. And, the tax policy for 12 years in a democracy is a long time. These are the tax rates that the economy would have been based on if we hadn't spent the last 4 years talking about how we're going to raise them for a whole bunch of small businesses and other people. We're talking about raising the capital gains rates and taxing dividends at the maximum rate a couple of times. All those things slow down what should be an economic recovery that people all over the world want to see happen for us. Mm-hmm. Everybody in the world benefits from a strong U.S. economy. And every economic leader in the world, no matter what country they're in, knows that. People want us to do the right thing, which is get our government right-sized to our economy rather than do what European countries have done, which is just, you know, get their economy, their government so big that their economy can't support it.
This is a big set of issues, though. The stakes are huge, maybe larger than any time, some say, in U.S. history in terms of the size and quantity of decisions you all have got to make the next few weeks.
Well, that's true. But, you know, you've heard me say before, Steve, I'm really a believer that there's sort of a generational cycle of politics in America where about once every 25 or 30 years we have a really big decision to make, and then we kind of work within that framework for the next 25 or 30 years. The president agrees with that. He said 4 years ago that Ronald Reagan was more consequential than Bill Clinton as president, not because he agreed with Ronald Reagan more necessarily. He's just making the point that that moment was so big that no matter who was president for the next 25 years, whether it was Ronald Reagan or Bill Clinton or either of the Bushes, that we colored within the lines that had been established in 1980. And you've been watching politics long enough to know that in 1980, the discussion was a lot the same. The issues are bigger than they've ever been. They're more complicated. Our system no longer works like it should. The presidency's too big for one man. We'll never be who we were again. And turned out not to be true at all. You know, we had 25 pretty good years once we decided that we were going to be who we were rather than we were going to be some version of Europe.
Missouri Senator Roy Blunt's our guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888. If you want to join our conversation, our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. Buzz from Tonganoxie. Buzz, welcome to Up to Date. Good morning. You there, Buzz? I guess not. What about, we had some more callers in the queue here. You're now back to supporting Senate candidate Todd Akin after calling him to withdraw from the race a few weeks ago. Senator, why the switch?
Well, I thought and still think that Todd's campaign got the focus off the issues that people should be concerned about, the economy, the majority in the Senate. But he's the candidate. I'm supporting Republican statewide candidates from on our ticket. That includes Todd. It particularly includes Todd because, without Todd Akin, Harry Reid may be the majority leader again. I do know the one vote that Todd and I don't agree on everything for sure. But the one vote we'll cast that I'm confident in is that Harry Reid won't be the majority leader. If there's a balanced budget vote, he and I'll cast the same vote on that in all likelihood. The big issues, and that's what actually Senator Danforth and Senator Bond and Senator Ashcroft and Senator Talent and I said at the time, that the big issues were so big that Todd should evaluate what he needs to do here and that the issues were bigger than him. I hope if he can get this back to the big issues, I think people are very engaged in the long-term history of the country and the long-term stability of the country, and we'll see what happens.
It's been a pretty unusual race. How successful do you think he's being right now in terms of getting the focus back on the big issues of this race?
Well, I think he is making an effort to do that, and I think the presidential election is beginning to refocus people back on just how big the difference is between a President Romney and a President Obama. Frankly, President Romney will be a lot more successful if he's dealing with a Republican Senate than if he's dealing with a Senate that's led by Harry Reid. I know Harry Reid. I actually like Harry Reid. When I was the whip in the House, he was the Democrat whip in the Senate. We have a good relationship, but I'm incredibly disappointed by the failure of the current majority to be willing to debate the issues that are before the country today.
Speaking of debates, are you surprised that the first presidential debate had as much impact on the polls as it apparently has?
Well, I don't know. I think it's hard with polling these days to maintain the efficacy of polling, the credibility of polling. Who are you talking to? When are you talking to them? What does your turnout model look like? But I clearly agreed with the almost universal view that there was no question that Governor Romney dominated that first debate, that he showed an understanding of the economy and the struggles that people are facing that was important for him to connect with the 70 million people that watched that debate. That's the guy that I'm for. I think for whatever reason, until the debate, the whole person never began to kind of get across to the American people like it did that night. A person of commitment and confidence and understanding who is prepared to do this job.
Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's try Jasper from Kansas City, Missouri. Jasper, you're on with Senator Roy Blunt. Good morning.
Hi, good morning, Senator. My question is, Medicare appears to be heading toward a pretty big fiscal cliff. And none of the spending that the Republicans are suggesting or that anyone's suggesting is going to back us off very much from that cliff. It seems like it's going to be there. It's a growing problem with the aging population. I'm just wondering what your solution to that problem would be without a significant growth in tax revenues. I don't see another solution to that problem. I'd like to hear yours.
How do you fix Medicare, Senator?
Well, Jasper, that's a good question. You know, everything, the fiscal cliff has kind of become the shorthand for every single problem we face. And, of course, the fiscal cliff problem for Medicare is that you already have $719 billion in scheduled cuts under the health care bill that I voted against. You have a 2% cut in Medicare that apparently would almost all go to providers, reducing reimbursement for physicians and hospitals. That is the fiscal cliff moment when that happens.
Is that a good idea?
What?
The reducing the payments to providers.
Oh, no.
You don't favor
it. Not a good
it.
Idea, yeah. Nor have I ever been in favor of this deal I voted against in my first year of the Congress, which is we were going to cut doctors' reimbursement, which we have now failed to do 10 years straight. We failed to do what the law said we were going to do. That's one of the reasons I voted against it. I thought it was something that it was a pay for that would never occur.
But you don't like the idea of why. You don't want to cut doctors' payments.
If you begin to reduce the payment to doctors and hospitals, you're clearly going to have fewer and fewer people who are willing to see Medicare and eventually Medicaid patients. We're talking about Medicare right now. So refusing to see Medicaid, surely that's not a good idea. You know, it doesn't matter if everybody qualifies for health care if nobody gets it. If the program you happen to qualify for is a program you don't get.
Mm-hmm.
There are solutions to Medicare. As you mentioned earlier, Senator Rockefeller and I are co-chairing, honorary co-chairs of the effort to try to be sure that congressional staffers at all levels know all the information they can know about healthcare solutions. This is something Jack Danforth started in 1990. And I think he and Jay Rockefeller may have been the two initial honorary chairs of this effort. But you've got to do things with Medicare, and they don't have to necessarily impact in any negative way current recipients. But the kinds of things that need to happen in Medicare, the age-related issues, both in Social Security and Medicare, have to be addressed. The demographics of the population have changed dramatically.
Would you means test it?
You know, everybody on my side seems to be willing to say you would means test it. I think whether or not you, matter of fact, Governor Romney says you'd means test it. I'm not sure I quite understand what they always mean by that. Does that mean that you pay a tax on a Medicare benefit when you get it? Does that mean you don't get Medicare at all?
If you're wealthy,
And then what do you get? You know, most of the senior systems in the country are almost all designed right now to wrap around Medicare. I'm not willing to do slogans here necessarily. I want to be sure that whatever we do works. I do know that in Medicare, in Social Security, you have about four moving parts, and that's all. And eight people around a table can solve Social Security
in an
afternoon if they want to.
And Medicare is a whole different
critter, isn't it? Medicare is harder. Medicaid is even harder still because of the state federal government partnership that has to occur there. But in Medicare, my personal view is that we need to look at models that don't reimburse for care for every single thing that happens, but are more toward looking at the whole health care needs of an individual. And somehow the model, it seems to me the models that have worked, and we've had one at St. John's Hospital in Springfield that's worked, where you get so much money as the provider for taking care of an individual, you don't have to spend all your time filling out reports. What you have to do is spend all your time trying to keep somebody as well as you possibly can, and when they're not well, treat that in whatever way is necessary to treat it.
Well, and speaking of healthcare, you just were named the new honorary co-chair of the Alliance for Health Reform. The Alliance is a nonpartisan and nonprofit organization What does that job do, Senator?
Well, what it really is this is what I'm just talking about, that Jack Danforth and I believe Jay Rockefeller started.
Right.
At one time, Nancy Kassebaum and Jay Rockefeller were the honorary. I think he's been the consistent co-chairman of this. But I've spent a lot of time on health care in the House and now in the Senate. The domestic issues that the Congress actually has to figure out how to deal with, as opposed to what do we do to create private sector jobs, the most important domestic challenge right now, of the ones the Congress has to deal with, health care clearly is at the center of the biggest domestic issues we have to deal with. And what this group does with outside privately raised foundation money is to try to present as all the alternatives possible to congressional staffers that work in health care. To put those groups together, to be sure that you're letting them see a real debate about what can happen in healthcare, and then hopefully be part of driving this healthcare problem toward a real healthcare solution.
Well, Senator, thank you for your time today.
Good to be here.
I know you got more stops in Kansas City. Sure appreciate your time.
Great to see you. Thanks, Steve.
That's Missouri Senator Roy Blunt. Coming up, Sue Vickery and her new documentary, Kansas City Jazz and Blues, Past, Present, and Future. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR.